Hello, and welcome to Line One, Your Health Connection. I'm your host, Dr. Jillian Woodruff. With the CDC reporting that one in every five deaths is attributed to heart disease, the quest for prevention has never been more critical. What if I told you there's a path to reduce your risk without relying solely on medications? A plant-based diet has been scientifically shown to lower heart disease risk by an impressive 25%. Imagine coupling this dietary shift with exercise, stress reduction, and healthy sleep habits. The potential for wellness transformation is immense. Naturopathic medicine integrates natural therapies with conventional wisdom, emphasizing lifestyle modifications as foundational elements for maintaining health and preventing disease. Our guest today will detail the profound impact of dietary choices on individual health and community well-being. Joining us today is Dr. Cameron O'Connell. She is a naturopathic doctor who provides care at Coordinates Health Care in Anchorage and offers telehealth throughout the state. She earned her doctorate from the National University of Natural Medicine, completed a residency at True North Health Center, and is a fellow of the American Board of Naturopathic Endocrinology. Dr. O'Connell aims to guide her patients toward optimal health through patient-centered preventative medicine and management of chronic conditions. Also joining us is Ms. Zanita Stetsinova, a mother, wife, homeschooler, who became an advocate for plant-based eating and community wellness after navigating her own personal health journey. Her experience led to significant lifestyle adjustments that not only improved her health, but also her family's well-being. Ms. Stetsinova's dedication to her community's health is evident through her founding of the Sunday Fresh Market at O'Malley in Anchorage and co-founding the Anchorage Veg Fest. These initiatives aim to educate and inspire the community towards healthier eating habits and sustainable living. Dr. O'Connell and Ms. Stetsinova, welcome.
Thank you so much. Thank you for having us and for that wonderful introduction.
Oh. Thank you very much, Jillian.
You're welcome. At this point, you can also join our conversation at any point through the show. Are you curious about naturopathic medicine? Have you considered a plant-based diet, but you're unsure where to start? Do you have a personal story through diet that has led to your health transformation? Call us toll-free statewide at 1-888-353-5752, 1-888-353-5752, in Anchorage at 907-550-8433, or email us at line1@alaskapublic.org. So I've been looking forward to learning from both of you. And we talk a lot on Line One about traditional medical treatments and maybe not as much about how patients themselves can have a significant impact on their own health. So I think this is very timely. So Dr. O'Connell, let's start with you and let's hear about naturopathic medicine and what got you into becoming a naturopathic doctor and what is a naturopathic doctor?
Oh, I love all those questions. So I grew up on the Kenai Peninsula. My father was an optometrist, and that was my trajectory in life. I went to see a naturopathic doctor in Portland, and they were fantastic at kind of getting to some of the underpinning as what was going on with my health at that point, putting together some of the symptoms and saying, hey, I think you've got PCOS. So a conventional quote-unquote diagnosis, but I felt that this person really took the time, heard me, and offered quite a few different treatment options. So that was great. Naturopathic doctors, so specifically NDs in the state of Alaska, we operate as primary care mostly, and that's how we're trained, is we're trained with a lot of the conventional modalities, but we also have a lot of training in nutrition and nutraceuticals and herbs. And a lot of my colleagues will do adjustments, much like a chiropractor. I don't. It's been a long, long time for me. But that's kind of the quick and dirty on naturopathic doctors.
Interesting. Yeah. I think some people would be surprised to know that you also go to medical school.
We do.
Just like allopathic doctors or osteopathic doctors.
Yes.
And it's a four-year program. Mm-hmm. There can also be residency involved. And so I think that's pretty surprising.
Yeah. So I think it does catch a lot of people by surprise. And I did my residency down in California at True North Health Center. And then came back to Alaska and started a practice. And that was fantastic. So here I am.
Excellent. Yeah. So born and raised, you're both born and raised.
We are.
Here in
I know.
Very interesting.
It's not a lot of us around.
No. or an acquired taste. Yeah. What can you say?
Well, you know, as a gynecologist, I've worked with naturopathic doctors. So we may have a patient that we have in common that we share, and we just come from two different perspectives. So through naturopathy, I feel like maybe they're getting maybe a little more holistic advice and care of how they can be empowered to take care of themselves. And then I may come with pharmaceuticals and things. Is this a common practice for medical doctors or DOs to work with naturopathic doctors?
So we are not licensed in every single state. So I would say it's probably a lot more common in certain states around the U.S., Alaska being one of those. Absolutely love my conventional, you know, medical colleagues. And I am very often sending patients off to specialists, people who have training that exceeds my own. So I'm thankful for that integration of care. I will say that I do share a lot of patients with MDs, and it's been a good experience, and we offer different things. So I think one of the points would be, hey, what do I offer as a naturopathic doctor? Why do people come see me? And one of the reasons is something I mentioned earlier is we have additional training, once again, in nutraceuticals, herbal medicine, and nutrition.
Yes, and we definitely did not get that training in medical school. Yes, these are things that we have to go through afterwards if we have
Absolutely.
An interest in it.
And then, you know, an interesting stat I looked up last night is 74% of people in the U.S. use supplements, and 55% call themselves regular users. So it's a big part of people's medical care and their medical journey, and being able to talk to somebody and, you know, give them advice on what to take, what not to take, depending on their diagnoses and depending on their medication and their medication burden is also something that I love to do.
Is there a specific type of patient that is specifically geared towards your care?
You know, no. I mean, across the board, I see people that from all walks of life and from different areas of the state who mm-hmm. are looking to have, once again, integrated care.
Interesting. Right. I guess everybody could use integrated care, right?
Well, you know, and it's also, I'm a big proponent of patients being in charge of their own healthcare. If it feels like this is something they're interested in, they want to look into it, dabble with it, it's always nice to have somebody who's got a little bit more, quote unquote, expertise in that area to step in. So that's why I think we work with so many different areas and so many different walks of life.
Well, often providers may tell their patients to do something.
Absolutely.
And they don't do it themselves, you know. Do as I say, not as I do.
Oh, you've been at conventions before,
maybe,
huh?
Not me. I don't know. But you are going to be discussing the benefits of a plant-based diet.
Yep.
And you also follow a plant-based diet.
I do.
Is there a name for your diet that you follow?
It's the Cameron O'Connell special. No, so I was a very reluctant convert. I grew up in this state. I grew up hunting, fishing, you name it. Dad had a garden, considered our diet to be honest, the top of the food chain when it came to diets. But during my residency and during my years in medical school, I saw the benefits of different diets. The paleo diet was very big at that time. And additionally, a plant-based diet, once again, very reluctant convert, but when I'm often asking people for their family history, one thing I like to say as an example is, hey, everybody in my family, their hearts explode, joking around that there's a high incidence of cardiovascular disease. And I saw a plant-based diet just have incredible results when it came to some of those basic biomarkers, watching total cholesterol, LDL plummet, hemoglobin A1C come back into balance. So reluctantly, yes, I do follow a plant-based diet. I am not vegan. I have animal products a couple times a year. Go fishing with the dad, but it's true. I do it.
What about the other people in your family?
You know, also some reluctant converts in there. But you know, family is family. So I just show up and I'm an oddball at Thanksgiving. Yeah, how that goes.
Well, we're going to dive in deeper, but we do have our first caller, and this is going to lead us into learning about Ms. Stetsunova.
Ooh.
So let's go to our first caller. We've got Victoria from Anchorage. Hello, Victoria. Welcome to Line One.
Hi. I just wanted to ask if there were monthly vegan potlucks still happening, and two, when the next
Veg Fest is.
Oh my gosh.
Look at that.
So,
I love it, Victoria.
We will get back to doing monthly potlucks. We'll be starting in April. And so that I'm actually working on the location. So the date will be out within the next 2 weeks. And then Anchorage Veg Fest will be Sunday, September the 22nd at the Performing Arts Center.
Oh, and tell us, what is the potluck? What does that entail?
So typically what a potluck is, it's really about community. You know, I think that it's really important when you're trying to engage in this lifestyle that you have other people to support you. So everyone brings a dish, a vegan dish to share. We eat, we chat, you know, and really just get to know each other.
Excellent.
Yeah.
Well, Ms. Stetsinova, your story is extremely interesting, and I know many people will be able to relate. So I'd love for you to share about your experience and what led you to become plant-based.
Okay, so I got here for health reasons, for sure. Before we got pregnant with our son, Nikolai, we had a miscarriage. And it was at that time that we found out that I had fibroids. I did end up having surgery to have those fibroids removed. So it wasn't a worry of those fibroids growing back, but new ones could grow. So it was still a major concern for us. Because they gave us such a hard time the first time that we conceived. At the time, I had this naturopathic doctor who had this theory, you know, fibroids tend to thrive off of hormones. And with all the hormones that could be found in our meat, she thought perhaps if I give meat a break, that it could give me some relief from fibroids. Sasha, my husband, I also call him Alexander. It's the same name, so don't get confused. I like to say Alexander's my husband and Sasha's my boyfriend. But
oh my.
Sasha,
that's
and I,
another show.
It's a whole nother show. Sasha and I were so desperate to conceive that we were truly willing to try anything. So we actually ended up watching What the Health. And after that, we were like, what the hell? Because it was like the first time that, you know, I never really explored like our food system and where our food comes from and how animals are treated. So it was a huge eye opener for us. And so we both went cold turkey. And for 6 months, we cut out all animal products from our diet. Within the 6 months, we did end up getting pregnant with Nikolai. I was a bit scared into eating meat, you know, people making me feel like I needed to consume meat in order to keep my pregnancy. And so I did start consuming meat while I was pregnant with Nikolai, started eating chicken and like fish, cheese and bacon.
Oh.
Cheese and bacon had me in a chokehold. I'm sure a lot of you can relate to that. I just couldn't imagine a life without those two things.
Right.
But it was a challenging pregnancy. You know, I was high risk because of my age. I had to see a high-risk doctor on top of seeing my regular doctor so that she can monitor those fibroids and make sure that they weren't getting in the way. And I ended up having high blood pressure. I mean, it was just like a stressful pregnancy. I was like, I thought pregnancy was supposed to be fun. And you were meant to like indulge in all those like naughty treats that, you know, it wasn't like that for me. Honestly, I just wanted to sit still because I really wanted to keep my pregnancy. I just didn't want anything to happen. Fast forward 3 years, we're pregnant with Ludmila. Two of those 3 years, we were pescatarian, which means we ate fish and we did still eat cheese. And I'm literally having the best pregnancy of my life, you guys. It was like night and day. I went to go see the high-risk doctor, and then she was like, you look great. You don't need to see me. And I was like, the whole time, she's like, no, you're good. I felt amazing. I worked out the whole time. I did yoga constantly. My blood pressure was actually even good. And not that this matters so much, but I actually looked amazing, and you can attest to this, Cameron.
I was there.
I mean, I looked good. I looked better than I did when I was pregnant. So we knew that we eventually wanted to cut out all animal products from our diet, but we had a baby moon planned and we were going to Europe and we were going to stop in Italy. And I was like, there's no way I'm going to be in Italy not eating cheese. So we decided that when we came back, we would cut it out. And that's what we've done. We are now on year 4 and going strong.
So can I jump in with a quick
question?
Sure,
please
do. When did you last eat cheese? Was that how far into the pregnancy?
So, God, I had to be, because I flew. So I think I was like
5 months.
Okay. And then you were pretty much animal product free.
No, not pretty much.
We were. You were animal product free.
Yeah, okay. Totally.
I thought so.
I'm so impressed. Yeah. So impressed with that story. And, you know, when we think about hormones and hormones such as estrogen feed fibroids, mm-hmm. right? Yep. And we notice fibroids growing during pregnancy. And a lot of people know about the hormones their bodies naturally produce. And then you know about synthetic hormones that you can get at the pharmacy, like birth control pills. Now, synthetic hormones, their chemical structure is similar to the structure of our natural hormones. Not identical, similar, and they're meant to function similarly to what are natural hormones. A lot of people may not know about bioidentical hormones and that their chemical structure is identical to the structure of the hormones that are naturally produced in our bodies. And where are bioidentical hormones found? They're found from plants. Mm-hmm. So that makes perfect sense that you're using plants
to heal.
And to decrease risk. Well, I want to go back to Victoria. Our caller is still with us because she has a question that I think fits in quite nicely right here.
Love it.
Victoria, you're back with us.
Hi, thank you. I was also wanting to know from the doctor.
Yes, Dr. O'Connell. Yes, Dr. O'Connell.
Dr. O'Connell, thank you. As a woman coming in with PCOS, what kind of treatment options do naturopaths provide, for example, besides kind of what I understand is the standard, which is metformin and a combination of different estrogen pills?
The nice thing is a lot of my answers are going to sound pretty similar. And the bad thing is my answers are going to sound pretty similar. One thing would be, of course, lifestyle change, like we're discussing with Zanita, of altering your diet so that we're, optimizing estrogen metabolism. So we're making sure that you are creating just the right amount of estrogen and also clearing it out nicely. Additionally, there are some supplements that we often use in and with PCOS that function somewhat like a pharmaceutical. I'm not going to claim that they do exactly the same thing, but berberine being one of those, inositol as well. So I have a lot of options with PCOS patients, and depending on the level that they want to get to with their condition and how much effort they want to put into it makes a big difference. And also, everybody's individual. Yeah. So depending on symptoms and where they're at in their journey, that'll make a big difference on the course of treatment and what we do.
And let me just define what PCOS is for those who may not know. It's the polycystic ovarian syndrome. And I really think it's a misnomer because, you know, you think this is just, you know, a gynecology problem where on your ovaries, you have multiple little follicles. And the issue, you want a follicle that matures when you ovulate, if you're of reproductive age, and that that follicle that ovulates and releases an egg is something that could lead to conception. So in PCOS, they have multiple little follicles, but they do not mature correctly. And aside from that, they may have this estrogen dominance picture, which thickens the lining of their uterus and leads to a lot of bleeding during their menses. And, you know, this may be acceptable, but the other issue is that it can lead to a uterine cancer if left untreated for long periods of time. Right. So, but this is one part of the picture. This is really a metabolic syndrome. So it affects your blood pressure. It affects your blood sugar. It affects your cholesterol levels. It affects your weight around the midsection. Oftentimes you put on weight around the midsection. And all of these things need to be treated. The gynecology picture is just one part of the picture. And so I love how she talked about berberine, right? Because it works similarly to metformin, and it is a supplement. But lifestyle, that's where the lifestyle and your diet really could make a huge difference. The problem is, and I know because I do eat meat. You may convince me otherwise, right? But so even though I may not be ready to make a change, imagine a lot of people aren't ready to make this. This is a pretty drastic change, right? But yes, if you have some of these conditions, you could really change everything.
Yeah. One of the nice things about a plant-based diet, too, is the increase in fiber. And so when we're looking at an improvement in your microbiome as well, and then number one, having regular bowel movements does seem to make a difference when you're looking at estrogen dominance. The vast majority of estrogen leaves through the urine, but a small amount leaves through the stool. And so I've noticed that women that are constantly constipated, we have effects from that that can even show up in, once again, hormone panels. So that's just my experience.
So another thing, the fiber, increasing the fiber helps metabolize those hormones.
Most people in the U.S. are obsessed with protein and how much protein we're getting in. But the reality is most of us are well below our RDA when it comes to fiber. And the impacts that would have on just kind of even from a public health perspective, too. There's quite a few papers written on this that the amount of money that's spent in treating constipation alone in the U.S., if we were to kind of if we were to bring that number down, we'd have billions of dollars saved, which is fascinating to me.
And there's a lot of medications that people take that increase constipation, too.
Oh, yeah.
So, you know, you take one thing to treat one issue but cause another issue sometimes, which is really tough.
Yep.
And I know, like with fiber, there's soluble fiber and there's insoluble fiber. And I think this is something very, it's difficult to understand. I don't know that people know these differences.
Nope. And nutrition is a very nuanced study. And there's a lot of good criticism out there on the way that we've been tackling it. I don't even know what to say, but as a section of kind of the medical field. But I think that we're slowly kind of making changes that are getting us some better answers.
Okay. Well, we do need to take our first break. And when we come back, I think we should define some of the specific non-meat diets out there. So you are listening to Line One, Your Health Connection. If you have a question or comment for our guests today, give us a call statewide at 1-888-353-5752. Or in Anchorage at 907-550-8433. After this short break, we will continue our discussion of naturopathic medicine and the power of plants with Dr. Cameron O'Connell and Ms. Zanita Stetsunova as Line 1 continues statewide. Welcome back to Line 1, Your Health Connection on Alaska Public Media. I'm your host, Dr. Jillian Woodruff. I'm joined by guest Dr. Cameron O'Connell, a naturopathic doctor, who has a special interest in training in longevity, cardiology, endocrinology, and sexual health. Also joining us is Ms. Zanita Stetsunova, a mother who used lifestyle and nutrition changes to alleviate medical conditions and is passionate about healing the community through food. Have you had challenges accessing fresh and healthy food? Have you seen improvements to your health through diet changes? Share your story. Call us toll-free statewide at 1-888-353-5752, 1-888-353-5752, in Anchorage at 907-550-8433, or email us at line1@alaskapublic.org. All right, I want us all to be on the same page with the types of diets that are out there, and then specifically what it is that you think is the best health-wise, Dr. O'Connell. So tell us about this.
So there's a lot of different terms. And honestly, I get people in my door all the time who define themselves one way. And then I get into the diets and it's something else. But from the literature standpoint, so vegan is definitely more of a lifestyle. Okay. So if you have people who are trying to eschew, and I'm trying not to get into anything too incendiary, but animal cruelty, then one of the things that they're going to be doing, of course, is not eating animals or using any animal byproducts in either how their food is prepared, or they're not going to wear leather. So there's, you know, a giant lifestyle that's tied into this. Vegetarians, who usually are, once again, in the literature, have a couple different iterations. So there's the lacto-ovo vegetarian, who eats both cheese and eggs. Often vegetarians that come through that I speak to, they just eat cheese. There's pescatarians who don't necessarily eat any mammalian meat. They'll eat simply fish. Sometimes they'll eat bivalves along with that or other forms of seafood. So that's kind of the plant-based iterations, but I will say plant-based has become a very popular term. It can encompass all of those. the diet that I espouse and I try to live up to is a whole food, plant-based diet. So that's looking at food and especially plant food and saying, hey, I want to get this in the most unrefined state that I can in general. So it's heavy on vegetables, whole grains, fruit, legumes. So those are kind of the four major pillars. Nuts, avocados, things like that. You know, problem with a lot of diets is that we end up having a lot of refined foods or processed foods that sneak in there. And so the way to make sure that I'm getting the benefits of plant-based without ending up giving myself type 2 diabetes along with it is to eat those whole foods.
Right. That was actually a thought that I had, is that I noticed that sometimes, especially in vegan restaurants, I see that they're not having the meat or the dairy, but they're having a lot of sugar and carbs.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, how do we make it so we're not replacing one thing with another? Yeah.
I like to point out, and I love eating out, so I'm not, you know, trying to point fingers, but usually when people are going out to eat, the restaurant's job is to get you to come back because it tastes good, not because it's holding up, you know, the dietary pillars. With that, though, when I have people who are eating at home or trying to make 95% of their choices, yes, I don't recommend going online and just deciding I'm going to become vegan today and I'm going to eat every last piece of processed junk food that comes across my plate. So when folks are trying to start establishing this lifestyle, I give them a couple of different websites, and I'm happy to share those if you wish. Okay. So Forks Over Knives being one of those comes up right away in my brain. Additionally, a little bit more on the fun side is Plant-Based Kiki and High Carb Hannah and a couple other folks who've been doing this lifestyle for a long time. But it should have a focus on, once again, cutting down the refined foods. So beans, tofu. I know, once again, we live in a world that's really concerned about protein. So I have people kind of focus on those. And once again, I tell them, hey, start replacing a meal at a time.
Yeah.
Do a couple meals. Find things you like and start taking out those dinners, and then start taking out those lunches, and then start taking out those breakfasts. Like, oh my gosh, what was it? BV6, or was it, VB6, which is Vegan Before Six by Mark Bittman. He goes through and explains kind of, it's one man's journey into going plant-based because of the fact he was worried about cardiovascular disease and watching his lipids go up. And I think it's a good way to kind of slowly enter that world. And also, speaking of fiber, you start bringing in all that fiber, not bringing in enough fluid, there's other problems afoot.
Right. Well, so, can you get enough protein from these non-meat sources that you talked about?
You can. And so Chana Davis, PhD, does a really great article in Medium, and I even wrote it down this morning so I'd remember the entire title, Busting the Myth of an Incomplete Plant-Based Protein. And she goes through and says, hey, listen, yeah, there's some problems with there are some concerns about the RDA. Granted, it should hit about 97.6% of us to get in plenty of protein for a mild to moderately active lifestyle. Protein optimization is definitely a large source of studies and focus. So you could bump it up there. You could say, okay, I want to get in 1.5 grams per kilogram instead. If you're eating enough calories and you're looking at large studies like the Adventist Health Study 2 or the Epic Oxford Studies, that has the largest amount of vegans and vegetarians, you're looking at what they're reporting to eat, you're overlaying and saying, okay, I want to work out, I'm going to turn into a bodybuilder, I'm going to need at least 1.6 to 1.9 grams per my body weight. If you're getting those 4,000 calories and you're eating plant-based sources alone, you're going to get in enough protein. It's pretty much impossible not to.
What about eggs? I don't think you specifically mentioned whether eggs are recommended.
So I try not to focus too much on individual, like when I'm working with patients, I try to get them to look at the diet as a whole and those big, you know, looking at longitudinal studies, because I think those give us the most bang for our buck. But when you're looking at eggs, there's some concerns out there, obviously. I work with a lot of people when it, from a cardiology perspective, of lowering those lipid panels without going and they're trying to stay off statins, whatever your opinion. So with that being said,
and statins are the medication that's typically used to treat high cholesterol.
And so if I'm trying to get those lipid panels to be reflecting a better pattern, often I'll get them off all animal foods because they're high in saturated fat. And one thing we've seen since even those metabolic ward studies of the 1950s is that depending on your genetics, saturated fat makes that LDL level go up. How much? Once again, probably depends on your genetics, but I've worked with a lot of people who we pull out everything, including eggs, LDL goes down, and I've seen it go down 60 points within a month. Wow. So there's some really great benefits with just diet alone. We're talking some weight loss, but not that much. Also, one other thing was there were some studies that came out where they were saying, hey, eggs are really great because what it does is it takes LDL, which we've labeled
the bad cholesterol.
The bad cholesterol.
Which probably isn't the best label.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. But since we do know that it ties in with atherosclerotic lesions, we get a little bit, you know, worried about it when it gets really high. Interesting thing, though, is supposedly if it's big and fluffy in size, it's less problematic than when it's tiny and small LDL. And eggs seem to push things to being fluffier. But the interesting part is really the risk factor is much more dependent on the amount of LDL particles bumping around in there. So size of the LDL has some impact, but not as much as we would like. If you have a high LDL level, no matter this, like if it's large and fluffy, you still have a 44% like increased risk in developing cardiovascular disease. I mean, excuse me. And then if it's small and hard, you've got a 60%. So there's a drop.
Okay.
But 44 is still a pretty significant number. And so being able to just say, hey, let's drop the LDL in total, let's be less worried about what the size of the LDL is, seems to have better bang for your buck in the end.
Right.
So why not just drop the LDL?
Drop the LDL. Makes it sound very easy. Well, are you aware of any specific health risks to adopting a non-meat or non-meat sourced diet?
Sure. I know a ton of risks for adopting any diet, right? Mm-hmm. So ketogenic diet versus plant-based diet, you name it. Like I've seen health risks across the board when people mm-hmm. tend to alter their diet. The big thing that comes up for a plant-based diet is that we see, especially kind of back in the 70s and 80s, that people were maybe not getting in enough B12. That's been laid down a little bit more to the sterile, so like our food being incredibly quote unquote sterile compared to what it was. Like you're not going out and yanking a carrot out of the ground with all that dirt and bacteria.
Our food's on less nutrient dense.
Mm. Yes, nutrient dense. And then also B12 is made by bacteria. So if you're not getting in certain foods at this point, you're not getting in a lot of B12. I will say though that in general, we fortify B12 in the US. So most of us are getting our B12 from fortified foods. And there's other people that are at risk for low B12, people over the age of 50, people who are on long-term antacid use. So it's one of the things you should pay attention to, but I think that's probably the biggest one I talk to people about.
Okay. Well, my mind is spinning because there's so much, right? If you, to be healthy, and we talked, I think the other day we talked about longevity and lifespan, yeah. And that is very popular right now.
Thank you.
I know it's very popular to live a long time right now. Right?
I don't know. How do you feel about that?
It's trending, yeah. But it's, you mentioned it's not longevity, it's not lifespan, it's health span.
Yeah, quality.
Totally rip that
but
off
you can,
from another provider.
I love
but
yes. that. I love that. But you could go crazy really trying to do all these things because
and people do.
Right?
Yeah.
But even you're talking, you know, we talk about not doing processed foods, mm-hmm. but really foods are processed. You talked about this fortified B12, that's processed.
Yeah.
So it's just so hard to figure out. So I guess it's just figuring out the path
balance.
That's best for you.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, and like a balance, right? Well, we have a caller that we need to get to. We want to welcome Bill from Juneau to line one. You're on the air.
I don't know whether I can.
Hi, Bill.
Hello.
Hi.
Thank you, folks, for the great program. Please excuse my gender.
You are welcome here.
My wife Nancy and I were first getting started in life almost half a century ago. We were inspired by Francis Moore LaPay's book, Diet for a Small Planet.
Oh, yeah.
I came late to your program, but it seems very self-centered here. Good. Pay attention and be responsible. But how do you counsel your patients of any gender who are interested in saving the planet as well as themselves, to realize that a meat-centered diet is extremely hard on the planet.
Oh my gosh.
And if they want to do something for climate change and saving the planet, be at least an aspiring vegetarian.
I love that.
That's a beautiful question. Thank yes, thank you. And I think you're really pulling on the heartstrings here. I see.
We love what you just said.
Oh, I love it.
All right. Who wants to tackle this first? How do we save our planet?
Oh, man. You know, to be completely frank, I often pass this question over to somebody else in the panel because I feel like they're better to speak to it than I am. I will say, though, if you are interested in a plant-based diet, there's a lot of documentaries out there. There are things that will talk about this a lot more in depth than I'm able to do today on this program in any really meaningful way. So I think there are some concerns and there's some valid concerns about a meat-centered and how we've really industrialized our meat production, especially within the U.S., and the impact on soil quality and the impact on water quality and watershed. There's a lot of good questions, and I think it's probably worth a whole other radio hour. So,
I will say, though, that is some of the things that we focus on at Anchorage Veg Fest. So we always have someone that, you know, from PETA or, you know, talking about the environmental impacts of consuming meat. So I welcome you to join us at VegFest this year. It'll be Sunday, September the 22nd.
We do love people from Juneau, so come on up.
I know. Come on.
I think this would be a great program to talk to an environmental scientist about. And I think also in that documentary you mentioned, What the Health, I think they talk about a little bit about the planet and, you know, the dangers of meat production and what it does. And then also thinking it's a whole cycle, right? So you have these dangers and then it's the pollution of our soil and our waters. And then that feeds back into the animals, right? Yep. So the fish are swimming through polluted waters and then we're eating those sources and then we're getting those toxins as well. So, you know, it's quite the cycle. So I love what you said, Bill, is just stop it. Start with you.
Yeah.
Start with self and don't be adding into it, I guess, is what he's saying there.
I will say that also something that we can do, especially in the summertime, is shop local as much as possible, you know, because things aren't having to travel here. So that's another way that you can be impactful.
I like that. And that's another thing you do at the farmers market, right? You're introducing local resources to the people.
Exactly.
Is there meat at your farmers market?
You know what?
Because there are local
We don't have meat at our farmers market. However, I wouldn't turn it away simply because that is a community effort. So it's for everybody. I've got other events where I can get weird and be like, this is only for vegan, you know, for vegan merchandise or food. So that's a community effort.
Yep. I want to get into just a couple, you know, we talked about cardiovascular disease, and I think we understand that, and I think we understand about diabetes, and certainly there's a link between the diabetes and the cholesterol, right?
Yep.
But some people may not know about the impact nutrition can have on allergies and asthma, so you can talk to us a little bit about that.
Yeah, so that one I think it's a little bit harder to kind of nail down. We have a lot of the, like, method of action when it comes to LDL going up for cholesterol and the like. When I first, at least, was in medical school, I remember being told, like, there is no link between diet and, you know, asthma, allergies, acne actually being one of those we kind of talked about. And so I was looking last night about a tie-in with acne. And there's a lot of conflicting information out there but there is now much more acceptance of the idea that at least whole milk is can help spur acne along. Also, the thing with a lot of dairy, which seems to be, there's a lot of dairy intolerance out there. 68% of the world's population does not absorb lactose very well. So that tells you right there that that particular food is probably not doing a lot of great things for a good chunk of the world population. And as for allergies and asthma, I just from an anecdotal perspective, I've had a lot of folks improve their symptoms when they come off of dairy. So it's one of the first places
dairy
I start
may be the culprit.
Specifically. Yep.
I know that I was having adult acne and I stopped eating dairy and my face cleared. However, I had stopped sugars as well. Mm-hmm. And I notice in holidays when I'm eating more sugars, but maybe I'm having dairy during that time, I'm mm-hmm. always having breakouts. Or during a vacation, you know, when you cheat on your diet, right?
Yes.
Worst timing ever. But dairy's made a huge difference.
Oh, those photos would have been so much better.
Right? Stay off the dairy. Well, we've got an email to address. We have Joe here from Anchorage. And Joe would like to know how a person with any of the irritable bowel conditions like colitis, leaky gut, who may not be able to tolerate many plants and especially grains, how would they accomplish a plant-based diet?
You know, that's an area in which I do tell people, hey, it would be good to consult a nutritionist, or it would be good to consult somebody like me, or even talk to your PCP if that you feel like that's a topic they'll be able to speak to, simply because every single one of those conditions that were mentioned could have a slightly different profile or reason. So another thing that we look into as naturopathic docs a little bit more, seeing it too in the conventional gastroenterology world, is small intestinal bacteria overgrowth, which sometimes can be a precursor or a driver for some of those conditions. And so, yeah, certain plant-based foods, quote, high-fiber foods, drive that forward. And I tell a lot of my patients, and this is probably going to mean a bit more to people who read a little bit more research, is you're an N of one. So you're a study of one. And so we have to kind of pick through and find the foods that don't seem to bother you and boost those foods and treat other underlying things like getting plenty of sleep, like we discussed, and getting exercise and helping out to address those underlying foundations of health and seeing how far we can get with that alone. So I've had plenty of folks that have actually had improvements with irritable bowel, Crohn's, you name it. Pam Popper is a naturopathic doctor out of Illinois. She has a ton of information on this topic and a plant-based diet implementation and improvements, and quotes more studies than I've got time to quote today. So if that's of interest, I would suggest looking at Pam Popper.
I know I've worked with functional nutritionists in the past, mm-hmm. which give a wealth of information.
Yep.
You know, oftentimes there is a lot of testing unless you're doing your own elimination diet.
Exactly.
But if you have no patience for that.
There are some tests.
Then there are some tests where you can just right. see if there's, you know, you probably know if you have an allergy to something, but this really just says what's causing an inflammatory reaction
yep.
in your body, and then removing those things. But that can be, it can be quite costly.
It can. And yeah. the gold standard is still an elimination diet and adding one thing in at a time. So I tell people, eventually you're probably going to get there. We could use some guidance with those tests, but one day.
Right.
Going to have to do it.
Well, we have to take our last break because when we come back, I want to talk about organic foods. I want to make sure that I talk about that today. So let's take a short break for the stations down the line. If you have a question or comment for our guest today, give us a call statewide at 1-888-353-5752 or in Anchorage at 907-550-8433. We'll continue our discussion on the power of plants in our diets. And when we return, you're listening to Line One, Your Health Connection on Alaska Public Media. Welcome back to Line One. I'm your host, Dr. Jillian Woodruff. Our guests today are naturopathic doctor, Dr. Cameron O'Connell, who helps her patients find their own coordinates of health by cultivating both patient-driven preventative medicine and client-motivated treatments for chronic conditions. Also joining us is Ms. Zanita Stetsunova. She's passionate about introducing local health and wellness resources to the community. She founded the Sunday Fresh Market at O'Malley in Anchorage, a vibrant, family-oriented farmers market that aims to foster connections among locals with local farmers, growers, and makers. Both of our guests were born and raised in Alaska and enjoy the benefits of a plant-based diet. You can also join our conversation. Do you want to know what it means when something is labeled organic and whether this is important? Give us a call statewide at 1-888-353-5752. In Anchorage at 907-550-8433 or email us at line1@alaskapublic.org. All right, we've learned about what the diet entails being plant-based. So Ms. Stetsunova, can you give us an idea of what are the first steps that we can take if we are interested in following this diet.
Yeah, sure. I think that for some people, you know, they can go cold turkey. That's so funny. I said cold turkey twice today.
Cold turkey.
Cold vegan turkey.
Faux turkey.
Exactly. I like that. You know, and never look back. I think that for the rest of us, it's important to give yourself grace because it's not just your eating habits. You're changing, you know, years and years and years of like thought processes behind like how you eat and how you, you know, nurture your body. For us, it was for sure a journey. It probably took us probably like four or five years altogether to make the full switch. And I would say our first step was education, you know, educating mm-hmm. ourselves on the benefits of a plant-based diet. And we consumed a lot of documentary. We like to playfully call it propaganda. and I want to suggest four documentaries that I think were really impactful for us. Of course, I mentioned What the Health already, and that was the first one we watched. And that goes into preventing and reversing chronic diseases. Game Changers is also a really good documentary. It highlights how athletes excel on a plant-based diet. And we're talking about anyone like from runners to cyclists to power lifters.
To football players.
Exactly. Should I let it out? Okay. Yeah. I have a big mouth. So I'm just going to say this. So super excited. Last week, we confirmed one of our guest speakers for Anchorage Veg Fest, and they worked on Game Changers. So this year is going to be fire for sure. Cowspiracy is another one. It explores the impacts of animal agriculture on the environment. So, Bill, that's a good one for you to check out, Cowspiracy. Seaspiracy, it documents the harms that humans do to marine species. These are four great documentaries to start with. You know, you get a little bit of everything. Health, environment, agriculture, where do I get my protein? It's a great starter pack. And then I'd also say, like, have fun with it, you know, have fun trying new foods, recreating dishes that you love into their vegan version. My husband and I, we've always cooked together. We cook with the family. It's a total family affair. Some vegan food bloggers that I absolutely love, Nora Cooks, I'm obsessed. Like, I don't think she can do anything wrong. You know, there's been times when I'm like, for reals, Nora, like all that seasoning. And I do it and I'm like, I should have known. Nora knows.
Nora knows.
So
make a t-shirt for you. Yeah. Nora knows.
Major fan, right? Mm-hmm. Also, Make It Dairy Free. It's this adorable couple that creates beautiful plant-based dishes, and they're really easy to recreate in your own kitchen. And another one I'd like to recommend is Plant-Based on a Budget. Now, she's not going to only save you money. She's going to also teach you how to make a whole meal off of your veggie scraps. She's absolutely incredible. So that would be like some advice I would give to anyone wanting to transition as far as like first steps to take, because I think it's a mental thing too, you know.
That's excellent. You know, the cost of fresh food is much higher than the cost mm-hmm. of processed food. And you think about how, you know, many of us live, we're all remote here in Alaska, right? And then those who live even more remote, perhaps they are actually making and growing and getting their own food. But for those without as much resources, I think it could be very difficult when you're going to the store and then you're getting food that rots when you get it home. You're not going to want to spend your money on that.
Yep.
Sure.
So do you mind if I jump in?
Go ahead.
So I've got, once again, patients from all over the state. And I will say Alaska is its own little beast when it comes to this, because obviously a vast majority of our food for a good chunk of the year is shipped in.
Yeah.
So we're getting it on the outer range of being good. And I do work with people who are out in the bush and trying to employ these diets. I will say frozen vegetables mm-hmm. are probably one of the best kind of ways to bypass that concern about things rotting or going beyond their expiration date. There's a lot of good information out there that when things are flash frozen at kind of the peak of freshness, you're still maintaining and keeping a lot of those good nutrients and phytochemicals around and available. So even as opposed to canned, I would say the frozen is a better option.
Okay, that makes sense. So they're freezing the vegetables at their peak. So it's holding on to those nutrients.
Mm-hmm.
That's great.
Another thing I like to do as well is just do a little bit of harvesting in the summertime. So I go out and I'll get stinging nettles and I'll dry those kind of
what
early.
Is that?
Stinging nettles. Not joking.
Early stinging nettles.
I would recommend gloves, right? So let's be cautious and dry those and keep those around and use those in soups and things. So, and Alaska also has an abundance of produce in the summertime. So if you can, once again, freeze, process that in such a way that you're able to preserve some of those nutrients, phytochemicals, it's great. And then the other thing is beans and legumes are one of the cornerstones of what we eat. And interestingly enough, I think that really came to the forefront during the COVID pandemic. All the beans were gone because everybody realized that they could
live
off beans.
I was like, where's my food at?
But dried beans are very economical. They're incredibly good for you. Pulses, legumes are one of the few foods that overlap in all the blue zones or areas where people routinely live over 100. So it's part of a good whole diet. And once again, if you're not looking at IBS, there's some other things that would make eating those foods incredibly difficult. But eating a lot of those beans, you get a giant sack of chickpeas, you're going to save a lot of money. Meat is not cheap. So going in and getting...
That's true. That's not cheap either.
Nope. So... yeah, I think you can actually do a plant-based diet even up here a little bit more economically. Once again, whole grains, getting brown rice, getting quinoa in bulk. You can make a lot of different dishes with pretty economically.
Dr. O'Connell, earlier you mentioned the name of a doctor who specializes in IBS and other gut issues. One of our emailers is wanting you to repeat that name.
It sounds made up. I promise it's not. Pam Popper. Probably her full name is Pamela, but she goes by Pam, P-A-M, and I believe the last name is spelled P-O-P-P-E-R.
Thank you. Thank you for repeating that. So now we're talking about cost. You make a lot of good points. Yes, meats are also very expensive, and so it may just take some more thought, you know, for us to get that diet together, but it's possible. So is organic food necessary? I think you may have a differing opinion. I don't know. Let's start with you, Ms. Stetsnova.
So, you know, for us, I think it's really about like controlling the controllables. You know, there's toxins and chemicals all around us. And so when it comes to grocery shopping, I do choose to shop only organic just for that, you know, because we do eat at home a lot. So it's like at least the food that I know that we're consuming at home isn't going to have a lot of chemicals in it. So for us, that is the way to go. I know that it can be expensive, but at the same time, like bananas, for instance, organic bananas versus non-organic bananas are usually within cents of each other. The difference. So not everything is expensive, you know, and then two, I think that you can, if you wanted to shop organic and, you know, you're just like trying to get into it, you want to be like cost conscious. The EWG actually creates this list once a year that,
EWG. What is the EWG?
Oh, God. What does it stand for? Hold on really quick.
Environmental something.
Yeah. Okay.
Working group, environmental working group.
It might actually, that actually might be it. But they put out a list.
That is it. Okay.
Yeah.
Perfect.
I'm like,
thank you.
They do annual research of the pesticides level in 47 popular non-organic fruits and vegetables. And they put a list together. So basically it's called the Dirty Dozen and Clean 15. And so the Dirty Dozen are things that you definitely want to try and get organic. Because, for instance, like strawberry is at the top of that list, and that's because it absorbs a lot of pesticides. So like fruits like pineapple or like avocado, you know, I don't mind getting non-organic because they're hard shell.
Yes.
Exactly. Shell. Yeah. So that's my 2 cents on organic. You want to?
My 2 cents on organic. So I live in a household where we eat probably 75% organic. There are some studies that have shown higher, you know, phytonutrients, phytochemicals, anthocyanins, you name it, in organic produce. So there may be some beneficial bits.
Those
are good things for you and for cardiovascular health that are going to be in organic produce at a little bit of a higher rate. Most likely that comes from the fact that these plants are put under stress a little bit more because they don't have a bunch of pesticides sprayed on them. Plants usually produce a lot of the good things for us when they're put under stress. So that's my theory. I mean, I have seen the studies that show that they do, these certain phytochemicals are boosted. Cadmium is higher often in plants where cadmium is found in non-organic plants. So there's a good reason to avoid, to a certain extent, foods that are not organic. However, a lot of people that I see that come in my office are like, well, I mean, I won't eat the lettuce on that burger because I don't know where it's from.
Oh, no.
The reality is most of us are not getting in enough fruits and vegetables. And so if we had just one serving more, there's some estimates that, you know, there would be 20,000 less cases of certain cancers out there if we just really improved our diet and the quality of the diet went up. And a lot of that is, once again, eating fruits, vegetables, fiber, you name it. So I don't want a conventional label to stop people from eating things that are better for them than the processed, heavy fat, processed animal foods. So that's my concern. And then the other thing is people see organic and suddenly they're like, oh, that Oreo can't be bad for me. It's organic.
Oh, like, no. Yeah, right. I've seen that. I've seen some organic cookies.
Yeah, exactly. Organic does not
my
mean.
My kids bring that to me. It's an organic candy.
Nice, smart kids. Mm-hmm. So I think there's some good things out there.
Excellent. Well, thank you so much for sharing like this wealth of information with us. And I think we have a lot more studying to do and exploring and learning. So thank you to you both, Dr. Cameron O'Connell and Ms. Zanita Stetsunova, for being with us today. Thanks to our audio engineer, Chris Hyde, and our producer, Madeline Rose. You can find more information on this and previous programs on our website at alaskapublic.org. Let us know your thoughts or suggestions by emailing us at line1@alaskapublic.org. This has been Line One, Your Health Connection. I'm your host, Dr. Jillian Woodruff. Thank you.
Line One is a production of Alaska Public Media, which is solely responsible for its content. Views expressed are those of the host and participants and not necessarily those of Alaska Public Media, this station, or its underwriters. Learn more about Line One and listen online at alaskapublic.org. This is Alaska Public Media.